ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Australia's always been the lucky country. Sunshine, beaches, and that one magpie that always seems to know where you live.
Yeah, get away from my chip, please. Luck might not cut it anymore.
So can we make our own luck and turn this complicated world to our advantage?
That's our global roaming summer season. Can Australia surf the world's chaos without wiping out?
Fresh new episodes all summer. Search for Global Roaming on the ABC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Would you consider yourself like a sweaty guy or a less sweaty guy?
I'm not particularly sweaty, but I must confess I am a bit paranoid about what my sweat smells like.
Is this paranoia steeped in any particular trauma that you want to talk about?
Maybe if I lay on a couch and somebody went back to it, there might have been some traumatic thing where somebody stuck their axilla in my face in school, but, you know, I'm not sure.
Is axilla a nose?
Axilla is your armpit.
Oh. AXILLA?
Yeah.
Amazing. I love it.
So, you know, there are people listening to us right now who will be taking their nose and putting it in their own armpit and having a sniff just to check.
I googled axilla and I don't know what I expected, but of course there's a photograph of someone's armpit.
Hairy or shaved?
Hairy. Of course, this is What's That Rash, the show where we answer the health questions everyone is asking.
And this week the question is about deodorants, antiperspirants and body odour.
So Claire asks, what is the difference between conventional deodorants and so-called natural ones? She says, I gather the natural ones are aluminium-free. Are conventional ones designed to stop or reduce the amount that you sweat, whereas natural ones don't? Is one healthier than the other? Claire says, do the natural ones simply provide a nice fragrance to cover the smell of your BO? My male friend doesn't use anything, and when he told me, I was horrified, but he doesn't smell at all. Should I go au naturel?
Really good set of questions, Claire. Thanks for sending them in. And I'm sure that it rings bells and anxiety moments for lots of people listening.
So when I'm thinking about natural deodorant, Norman, I'm thinking about crystals. You can buy them in lots of shops these days, but 10, 20 years ago, you really could only buy them in like natural food stores or alternative stores. So I think for me, they had a whiff of like woo wellness to them.
Well, do you think I'm woo-woo?
No, you're the furthest thing from it.
Well, I use crystal deodorant.
Really? Okay. Tell me how this came to be.
I don't know, maybe 15, 20 years ago or something like that, I just started reacting really badly to deodorant, regular deodorant. I never used antiperspirant, just regular deodorant. So I would try all sorts of deodorants and they all caused the same problem. Really quite a severe allergy, so severe that I actually got bleeding in my armpits.
Oh, no!
Oh, yeah. My armpits looked like World War III. It was a real problem because I'm not one of these people like Claire's male friend who gets no body odor. I do get body odor. So what the heck do I use? And I can't remember how I came across them, but I came across these crystal deodorants, which are not woo-woo. They contain high-dose mineral salts, which inhibit the bacteria under your arm. But what I did find was that all crystal deodorants are not the same. So I went on a journey to find the right crystal deodorant.
A man on a quest.
And one day on the Gold Coast in a pharmacy, I saw some crystal deodorant there and I bought it and I've been on it ever since. In fact, I'm so addicted to this crystal deodorant, I'm paranoid they'll go out of business. So I keep on phoning them up. Can you just send me another six? And so my drawers
are
full of these. Essentially, the crystal deodorants do work. You just got to use them in a reasonable concentration.
Well, okay, so you mentioned that they're made from crystal mineral salts. I think it's important to define how BO happens and why it only happens in your armpits or in specific parts of the body and not others.
Essentially, you get body odour from areas in the body which have more skin bacteria. So a lot of this is about, it's a fascinating story about where we get it and why. And there's a lot about genetics and evolution involved here.
You know I love me a deep time story that involves some evolution. Let's get into it.
And what does earwax have to do with body odour?
What?
That's going to blow your ears out.
Come on, give it to me.
Okay, so to illustrate how important genes are in the story of body odour, there are people in the world who don't produce body odour, and Claire's male friend might be one of them. And they usually have a mutation in one of two genes, but mostly a gene called ABC11.
It sounds like you just made that up.
Well, people can check the show notes here to see whether I make these things up. So there are people who don't produce body odour. So you have these bacteria on your skin, and various bacteria can cause body odour. But the body has got to give the bacteria food, if you like, that will generate the body odour. So what are called precursors. And the people with this ABC11 mutation, who are often from Asian populations, don't produce the precursor. And therefore, the bacteria don't have anything to metabolize to produce the body odour. And this is where earwax comes in.
The people, I think I know where you're going with this, but I'll let you tell the story.
Well, the people with this genetic mutation also have white, dry earwax rather than yellow, soft earwax.
There's two different types of earwax. Maybe you're a dry earwax person, maybe you're a wet, orangey-yellow earwax person. And so you're saying that those two things go hand in hand?
Yes. Could be that it's one of our favourite words, pleiotropy. Genes that have more than one effect on the body.
Yes, exactly. So I suppose the thing is, I don't like the smell of BO. It's obviously possible to be a human without it. Does it have some kind of purpose?
Well, people have wondered about that and created all sorts of hypotheses for this. So, for example, there was one famous experiment where they gave women men's T-shirts to smell that they'd been wearing for a while, and to tell the researchers which T-shirts they preferred the smell of. And what they concluded was that there was a tissue typing mismatch, that in fact that women preferred men of a different tissue type.
What's a tissue type? Is this like a blood type?
It's like your tissue type for organ donation. And the idea here is that if you've got a mismatch, it's about genetic diversity, what have you. But let me just say that that experiment was dubious. The only women who registered this finding in terms of T-shirts actually were on the pill at the time, and it's not been replicated because other people thought, well, maybe there's something to do with the immune system of recognition of odours, which makes you more compatible or a much more healthier match immune system-wise with your partner. And in fact, it hasn't played out. Another theory for body odour, because identical twins tend to have the same body odour.
That makes sense. But you said it was to do with bacteria.
Yes, but it's bacteria munching on the stuff that we present them with. And the stuff we present them with is largely genetically programmed. So the people in Asia who've got this mutation, or maybe Claire's boyfriend, they are not presenting the bacteria with anything to munch on, and therefore body odour is not produced. And it's not guaranteed that just because you've got a certain kind of staphylococcus or carinobacterium in your armpit that you're going to produce a certain kind of body odour. There's a certain specificity to the body odour that you produce. And then you've got to add something else to this body odour story.
All right.
Some people don't produce any body odour, even though they've got bacteria. Some people produce different odours depending on their genes that they have. And then your ability to smell and detect body odour is also genetically determined.
Oh, that's like the asparagus wee thing.
Yeah.
Where some people who, when they eat asparagus, it makes their wee smell different, and some people it doesn't. But then some people can smell the different wee smell and other people can't, and there's not always an overlap.
Yes. Well, in fact, some people believe that, in fact, when you eat asparagus, if your urine smells, it's actually more about the smeller than the person who's ate the asparagus. So in other words,
if you smelt it, you dealt it.
Exactly. That's right.
So this has been somewhat of a tangent. But what I'm getting from this is BO is real. It's caused by bacteria interacting with the sweat on our bodies. And so that really kind of informs what deodorants are, whether antiperspirants or chemical deodorants, because they're really trying to interfere with that process to stop BO from forming.
That's right. So deodorants are a combination of usually antibacterial agents and a fragrance, so that when you get breakthrough and you do get metabolism of the sweat, you don't notice it quite so much. Antiperspirants do interfere with the ability of your sweat glands to produce sweat, so you're not providing the raw material for the bacteria to act on, and your underarms don't show the sweat on a hot day.
So when we're coming to natural deodorants, the ingredient in deodorants that most people seem to have issue with in terms of health things is aluminium, which is usually in antiperspirants. It's the aluminium on your sweat glands that sort of stops your sweat from being able to get out, to put it super crudely. Why aluminium? Why are people concerned about health effects there?
Well, aluminium in high doses has been associated with brain damage and maybe dementia, and also in high doses has been associated with kidney damage. And so people have got paranoid about aluminium from pots and pans. And there really is no relationship between aluminium in cooking utensils and problems such as kidney failure and dementia. But there have been fears about aluminium over the years. And the studies that have been done on aluminium and antiperspirants is that 95% of the aluminium stays on the skin, which is where you want it to stay because that's where it's acting, and does not get into the bloodstream. So only tiny amounts get into the bloodstream and nowhere near the toxic doses that are a worry in terms of brain function and kidney function.
Well, one of the main concerns with antiperspirants is the potential theoretical risk of breast cancer. And I think it has something to do with the fact that you're putting product in that vicinity, which we know is porous and close to the breast.
Yeah, they have looked at it and haven't found any link. And if you think about the way it works, is that the lymphatic drainage from the armpit tends not to go to the breast. It tends to be taken from the breast. And looking at it epidemiologically, they can't find a link between antiperspirants and breast cancer. Having said all that, I wouldn't use an antiperspirant myself because I just don't believe in, unless you have to, interfering with natural processes in that way. You just don't know what you're playing with.
You clearly don't live in Brisbane.
No, that's absolutely true.
So, I mean, one of the questions that Claire asks is it unhealthy to stop up your sweat glands? Because it's a natural thing your body's trying to do. Is there anything to that?
Not in that localized area. We have a myth about sweat, is that when you sweat, you're sweating out all these body toxins. Mm. And all you're sweating out is salt and water. Yeah, it's not body toxins.
But sweating is important.
It's very important for temperature regulation and also in terms of fluid balance in your body, that if you sweat too much and you're not taking it in, you could become salt and water depleted.
But just your underarms alone not sweating isn't probably going to do much of a difference in that regard.
Correct.
It is interesting to me whenever we have sort of something that feels completely ubiquitous, almost you don't argue with it. Everyone sort of seems to use deodorant these days. It's such a new thing that we use it and that we have such a big industry around it.
Yeah, there is a cultural element here, and that's the story in Asia with these non-odor producing people with that mutation there. Certainly when you hear stories about medieval industrial London, people do talk about body odor and do talk about it being unpleasant, not as ubiquitously as today, but I think it has been an issue. Although people, coming back to a previous What's That Rash on showering and not washing, some people argue that eventually you do get to the point where you stop producing body odor. Maybe you've just killed off all the bacteria because I think, ugh.
Did you know that one of the first antiperspirants was actually designed by a surgeon who had invented it to keep his hands sweat-free in the operating room?
Oh, really?
Yeah. So when we look back in like the history of deodorants, there had been others around, but like the sort of pivotal moment for why everyone suddenly got obsessed with their armpits happened in around 1912. And there was a high school student, Edna Murphy, and her dad had invented this antiperspirant paste that stopped his hands from sweating so that he could like do a good job as a doctor. So she patented it, Odorono, and went to the Atlantic City Exposition and tried to sell it to everyone out there. But it had some problems. It was like an acid suspension, so it was quite irritating.
No problem at all.
That's probably why your armpits
were bleeding. I can feel my armpits getting sore just talking about it.
It was also red coloured.
Great.
So again, it
might have stained the clothes.
But they basically turned to the age-old advertising approach of making people feel shamed and self-conscious to sell it, and it worked. And so they ended up having these ads that were like, this is why people don't want to be your friend. And no one wants to say anything because you stank. And they had ads in newspapers and it took off from there. And now Odorono isn't really a brand that we would hear, but they were probably the one that kickstarted this whole industry.
Yeah, and they used to advertise certain soaps as well to prevent BO. And you're right, post-war, BO was a big marketing angle to sell soap and cosmetic deodorants.
So yeah, a big push there from advertising that makes it so ubiquitous. But like you say, there is science to it. So okay, now we need to talk about natural deodorants specifically and whether they do anything differently or better than conventional deodorants, whether Claire is onto something here.
Well, Claire asked about aluminium and whether natural ones simply don't have aluminium in them. Our research suggests that there is no, we'll no doubt get millions of emails for saying this, but we can't find evidence of a natural substance which inhibits perspiration. So really, we're not talking about natural antiperspirants, we're talking about natural deodorants. And the ones with the strongest evidence are indeed these crystals, because they present, for bacteria, a toxic environment which they can't grow because there's so many of these mineral salts around the axilla.
So they're not just masking the fragrance. They are actually stopping the bacteria from producing the smells that we don't like so much.
Yeah. And the question then with crystal deodorants, do they last as long as other deodorants? Because the cosmetic deodorants have a lot of research and development in them, and they do tend to last a long time. And on my N of one study with me and my best available crystal deodorant.
It's an N of two because you have two armpits.
Oh, that's true. I could just do one.
Gosh, you should. Could you please, yeah, please do a side-by-side trial?
The problem is here, you're not good at smelling your own, but you've got to choose the person who smells your armpit very carefully, because they might be a non-smeller and who can't smell body odor, and they say, oh, you smell fine. Whereas then you could go to somebody who's hypersensitive odor detector, because they exist as well, and you could have the slightest smell that nobody else detects, but they do. It's a lottery who you get to smell you. So
my fan theory is that Claire is actually a non-smeller and her male friend does stink, but she doesn't know.
Could be, but he might be an ABC 1-1.
Well, what's our takeaway then for Claire? Natural deodorants, yeah, nah, maybe?
Yeah, from my experience, if you want to go for a natural deodorant, go for a crystal one, because they do work. They haven't got stuff in them that's going to give you an allergy, and you'll soon find out whether they work for you.
But is there anything harmful in the conventional ones that we have if you are not allergic as you are?
Not that we can find from the literature, no.
Well, thanks, Claire, for sending in that question. You can always send in your questions. We are thatrash@abc.net.au.
And we'll see you next week.
See you then.